And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
"755 is Real" with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome to 755 is Real, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. And Eric, I'm with Eric O'Flaherty, my co-host. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic. And man, there's plenty to talk about with the Bravos, and specifically Max Fried. Dude, what did you think of Max Fried yesterday in game two up in Milwaukee?
Oh, my God. I mean, just looking in his eyes, he was – that intensity he had was unreal. Yeah. You could tell just looking at him, he was about to do something special, and he did.
Have you ever been teammates with a guy who was so mild mannered as Max Fried, so quiet off the field and everything, and then when the game starts, he's like Mr. Intensity, just flipping the switch.
McCann was like that. Yeah, really chill, nice to everybody. Cross him on the field, he's ready to fight.
You know, he's ready to stand in front of home plate and go face to face with. Not let you cross home plate.
One of my favorite moments of all time.
Oh, that picture of that with the mask up, he's in his face.
That's him, though. He's chill all the time, but I mean, it's somebody cuts him off in traffic or something, doesn't go his way, man. 0-100 in a hurry. But I mean, that's what you saw out of Fried yesterday. You know, he just came out with an intensity and aggressiveness that I think that shows just what a kind of, you know, what big games do for him. And something special about him is he always seems to rise to the occasion.
I mean, this run that he's on right now, though, that started at the end of it started July 28th in New York. I wrote about that today in story because I remembered some comments he made, and I went back and found those during the game last night and asked him about it afterwards, and sure enough, it did start. And since that next start, beginning of the 1st of August, he has been the best pitcher in the majors. I mean, you could argue he has been the best pitcher in the majors. He had the best ERA in the second half, and that's even including some bad starts right out of the chute. So he's only gotten better as this thing's gone on. But his last four starts – and these have been huge games.
Yeah.
At San Francisco, when they had that little losing skid going in the series finale on Sunday afternoon, tremendous. A week later at San Diego, or not week later, 5 days later, when they lost the suspended game, the conclusion of the suspended game, they tied it up, then blew it. Will Smith blew that game, and Max comes out that night and throws that CG, that Maddox, in under 100 pitches. That was a series they knocked the Padres out of contention, and then against the Phillies when they're trying to clinch and they sweep the Phillies, and he was incredible in that one. And then the fourth one in that run is last yesterday against the Brewers. So he's been. You could go back and look at the annals of Braves greats, as many greats as they've had, and all the Cy Young Award winners they've had, and you won't find many guys that have had a four game stretch like he's put together, especially not in as significant of games as he's done it in.
No, every single one of them was a big game, and he showed up every single time. I mean, when he's on, when he's locked in, dealing with 95 fastball, he could place it, mix it in his changeup, and a devastating curveball. I mean,
and a slider.
Yeah, he's sinker. Got everything's plus.
Yeah,
and I think the mentality to go with it. You know, he had that bulldog mentality that you always hear about guys, and it's strange because, like you said, he's off the field. He's pretty chill. You
know? Oh my God, he's so chill. He's like, but, at a post game interview, you can barely hear him. They have to turn up the volume.
He saves it for the game when that bell rings,
and he brings it right back down when he's after the game. He's back to this mode, but during a game, he's like, "Don't even look at me wrong."
Yeah.
I mean, he just attacks hitters. He's so aggressive.
Yeah,
it's tremendous. I asked Craig Counsell. I've known Craig since he was a rookie with the Marlins on the '97 World Series team I covered. Craig Counsell, he's coming, I think, best manager in baseball. But I asked him about Fried after the game yesterday, and he said, The dude is, he goes, there's just so many strikes. He comes at you and but he doesn't give you anything to hit. They're all great. Yeah. They're all so well located. And he's got like five pitches that he keeps you off balance. He's not, you know, he's never gets down to two, having to throw two or three pitches. He's mixing everything right now.
He even went and caught that foul ball off the third baseline between Dansby and Darnell, and he just ran over there and got it.
Yeah.
You know, that was another thing that you don't see a lot of pitchers do, but his focus and intensity yesterday, when you see a pitcher come out like that and you're the other team and you know what kind of stuff he has and he sends that message in the first inning, you know you're in trouble. I guarantee they don't want to see him again.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about how good a hitter he is because it's like so secondary. But, I mean, the guy's just right now, they got to lock this guy up, man. It ain't going to be cheap, but they got to try to lock this guy up multiple years because, I mean, you got Charlie for two more years if you want him, at least one more year. You need Freed to build around. He's your guy, you know.
Yeah.
We thought it was going to be Soroka, and maybe it still will be Soroka, but there's big question marks, you know, with him coming back. But Freed's your guy, and he's 26, 7 years old, just coming into his own. There's no reason to think he can't do this for 3, 4, 5 more years.
Yeah. He's had some injury stuff. But that's really the only question mark about him. You know, I think he
– And the blister thing's got it under control.
The blister thing, yeah, you know. But having the arm surgery early and all that, you know, teams are always going to worry about that. But,
right.
I mean, just the way he pitches and the stuff he has, you don't – I mean, it's Kershaw level, honestly. What he's doing and the package, he's the total package. So they get him for a good deal, man. I'd sign on the dotted line.
Between the talent, the mentality, the intelligence.
The mentality for me. And intelligence.
And he's so intelligent, so cerebral, so intense, and so diligent. This guy works as hard as anybody, as a total perfectionist. And Charlie's rubbed off on him, too, as far as preparation. I was talking to Darno yesterday, and he said where before Freed might have tried to cram his between starts preparation like into one night, you know, think I just do it all in one night, you know, he would prepare, but he would do it like in one day. He's watched Charlie like spend the whole 4 days between that and do it, not cram it all in, do it kind of slowly but steadily and work on this and never don't leave any stone unturned, go over everything. Do a little bit each day, and he's watched Charlie be methodical about that. And Darno said it's really rubbed off on him. That Charlie's whole preparation between starts, routine has really helped Max. He thinks so.
And well, it just gives you so much more confidence too, being prepared and knowing, you know, if you're just showing up and throwing the ball when the catcher calls a certain pitch, it's all that stuff. It's the first swing percentage. You know, knowing a guy swinging first pitch and all that little stuff that you can kind of get into detail on. When you throw the pitch, you just have so much more confidence and you're so much more convicted when you know it's the right pitch. Not when you think it might be, but when you know it. And if you watched him pitch yesterday, he pitched with so much conviction. There was no doubt in a single pitch he threw. It was just pure attack mode. And as a hitter, when you got a guy coming at you like that, attacking you, not fidgeting around, you know, not picking around the corners or something, but here's my best stuff and here it is. It's intimidating for hitters. And I just, watching him yesterday, you could just tell they were overmatched.
Before we go any further, should talk about this game 3, Monday in Atlanta. We're back in Atlanta now after splitting those two in Milwaukee. Off day today, Sunday, they had a workout. Really, it was an optional workout. So the Braves really, Snip basically gave them the day off, and which I think they've all appreciated, you know. What are you going to do at this point, you know, on a workout after coming back from Milwaukee? I think they'd benefit more from getting the rest. So they'll come back at it tomorrow. And the tricky thing is tomorrow. This is weird, man, because the Braves, the game is scheduled for 1:07 p.m., which is a ridiculously early hour for a playoff game on a Monday. It's a holiday, though.
Yeah. But,
if the White Sox win a game tonight, if they avoid being swept, it'll stay at 1:07. But if the Astros sweep the White Sox tonight, they will move the Braves game to 4:07, which is a pretty big deal. If you're a Braves player, you're not going to know till tonight. I mean, pretty late, whether you're playing at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Yeah.
I guarantee you want the later game because it's, you know, day games, it's always hard to fall asleep, especially day game and a playoff game.
1:07, that's a spring training start, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
or a Sunday afternoon end of a series start, but I mean,
you know, there shouldn't be any challenge to get up for a playoff game, regardless of when it starts. But I always look at these starts and see, you know, sometimes they even push it to like 12:10 or 12:40. That's just not what you're used to. And you can't just make a decision to fall asleep at night. You know, you're on this baseball routine. You're practicing these late hours all year long. You know, you can never fall asleep before 2 a.m. in the baseball season because majority of the games are night games. So to be sitting there tonight and just – I guarantee they're rooting for the Astros to finish it so they can get some more sleep tonight.
Yeah. But
you're looking at it. I mean, it's almost even worse. You just want to know what time you were playing for sure to kind of prepare for it. But I guarantee you they want that late game just to get a little more sleep and have a little more time in the morning versus rushing to the park in the morning.
I would think it's got to be worse for the starting pitcher, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that your whole preparation, the hours you spend leading up to it, you got your whole routine thing. Okay, am I going to start this routine tomorrow at 8 in the morning? Am I going to start it, you know, at noon?
Yeah. Well, gets a little later hours, though, because they can kind of show up whenever they're ready. And
right. The whole thing, you start at home and all that, your meal and all that, you know, whatever you do. And
yeah. I don't like a variable time at all. You know, I'd rather have just a set time, but that's one especially thing they do in the playoffs.
Especially not one that's decided until – it'd be better if this game right here was deciding that, you know, in other words, this Boston game. So, yeah. It would have really gotten – if both of these teams had finished off sweeps today, or both these ALDSs had been sweeps, and then it would have – another time, it would have moved even higher up in the night game. But anyway.
I'm trying to think about the shadows, though. Because if you're a starting pitcher and you start like a 3-4 o'clock game, you get some nice shadows for yourself versus a day game. The field's lit the whole time. So, that could be a big factor too.
4 o'clock with the sun, and it's getting a lot darker a lot earlier now. Yeah. There's no doubt going to be shadows in the first, at least for the first hour or so, I would think.
Yeah.
Could definitely affect them. Remember that Bumgarner, the no-no
that
he threw for 7 innings?
Yeah, he's the shadows.
That's when that game started. No, that game started at about 5, I think, but that was when it wasn't getting dark until, you know, 9.
Yeah.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Game 3 matchup, you got Ian Anderson going against the Brewers' Freddie Peralta. They made it official today. The Braves thought they were going to use Freddie Peralta, but Craig Counsell waited till today to announce it. And Freddie Peralta was up, warming up at one point in that game, too. They were ready to use him if they needed to. So, but he will be starting. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't go in game 2. I mean, I know Woodruff gets so much hype, but to me, Freddie Peralta is a more formidable foe. I mean, this guy, 10-5 with a 2.81 ERA during the season, 0.970 WHIP, 28 games, including 27 starts. And thing is, he's got 195 strikeouts in 144 innings, man. 56 walks, 14 homers. 25 years old. 12.2 strikeouts per 9 innings is his ratio this year, and that's right at his career average. And he's been in parts of 3 seasons before this year. Never been a full-time starter until this year. When he's on, this guy can be pretty dominant. But I don't think the Braves have to worry about him going, you know, too deep in the game. But Braves got to feel a lot better about Ian Anderson than they would have 3 weeks ago. Because he really looked good in his last 2 starts after some shaky ones coming off the IL.
Yeah, and he's another guy that I think has a special poise to him. You know, I don't think the moment's going to be too big for him. And that's the first thing you worry about with young guys in the playoffs and that. But he's also got that just a different look to him, you know, that I don't know how many times the Brewers have seen him, but it could go really well for him, and pitching at home's big. But I feel good about the offense in this game too, the team getting back home, and it's going to be loud in there.
Oh, yeah. And Peralta, it's his first postseason start. He's only pitched in two playoff games, one in 2018, one in 2020. Both were relief appearances. I didn't check and see whether they were on the road, but yeah, it's going to be very loud. So that'll be interesting. Whereas Ian Anderson pitched in those four starts last year. He was phenomenal in the postseason last year. The first three, he gave up no runs, gave up two in his NLCS, his last NLCS start. So, but he ended up going 2-0 with he was terrific. 2-0 with a 0.96 ERA in four postseason starts last year. So, I mean, he was tremendous. And that was only after making six regular season starts in his rookie year.
Yeah.
You know, he came up, called him up midway through that pandemic shortened season, and he was phenomenal. But he never showed any nerves. And we've talked about it. It's how he kind of got to ease into the crowd thing, pitching in empty stadiums last year. And then, you know, they had limited attendance for the NLCS, then limited attendance at spring training this year. And then over the course of the year, he's pitched in full houses, you know, at home, and then a couple on the road too. So that crowd shouldn't be anything for him, especially at home.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot better to make your playoff debut when the crowd's on your side.
Right.
You know, versus on the road. On the road could be tough. I'm watching this game in Fenway, you know, just Rats a tough place. Tough place to go, you know, but I feel good about Ian. I feel like if he can get a good five or six, you know, it's nice you get that off day in the postseason.
Yeah.
Matzik had to work a little bit the other day, but you get him a free off day and he's ready to roll. Luke looked all right. Will did his thing.
Matzik was phenomenal. Threw almost 30 pitches. Intense pitches.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Ian had the 6-week stint on the IL after coming out of the All-Star break. And that thing dragged on longer than people thought initially that it would. And then he was rough coming out of that. You were really worried going, he's just not going to be ready this year. I mean, that set him back too far because he had a 4.66 ERA. And remember, he gave up six homers in 19 innings in those first four starts back. And you're like, what is going on? Because this guy gave up one homer all last year, you know, in his starts. But in the last two, though, he looked like himself. 2.08 ERA, went six and seven innings in those two starts, and gave up a total of five hits and one homer in 13 innings. So, I mean, he looks back to me. So, and that's good. I mean, those two have looked so much better than he did in those first four back off the IL.
Yeah, and he's going to be the difference maker in the playoffs. You know, if this team wants to go deep, they need him. I feel good about Charlie. I know he got the loss the other day, but
pitched great.
Didn't score. You know, I mean, if he did that and the team scored five, he's a hero.
He pitched great until 7-10.
One bad pitch, hit a guy and made a bad pitch. Then Fried did what he did. If he shows up with that mentality every time, I can't see anybody rocking him. But Ian's the guy that it's going to swing on. You know, that number three spot. If he can do his thing, I can put this team up against anybody.
Yeah, because there's big question marks after three. So you need to get some from those three and then go do what you can, piecing together a bullpen game or whatever you got to do. You know, I heard some people say, couldn't you bring Charlie back on short rest for game four and then have Max on regular rest for five? I don't think at 37, when he hasn't done it, that Snit is going to do that to Charlie. I mean, though Charlie would gladly do it if he asked him to, I don't think you can expect him to. When he's had these routines of his, he did it on short rest years ago in a relief appearance in a World Series game seven when he went four innings with the Astros.
Yep.
He's 4 years older now, and he hadn't done it all year, hadn't done it in a while. I just don't think he ever did it with the Rays. I just don't know think you can do that. And especially he went, you know, 85 pitches in his first game.
Yeah.
Pretty intense.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be kind of, it would reek of desperation. Maybe if you lost this game, you know, if you lose tomorrow, then maybe you have to consider that. But but obviously Charlie has to be completely with that and go, you know, and be honest and go, yeah, I can do it. I'm not worried about it. I can do it. You know, but
I'd put money on him being willing, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. But he's got to be honest and say, can you do it and do it well? or are you going to go out there and fall apart in two innings and then we're really screwed because, you know.
Yeah.
Then you got to go, then you got to go bullpen the rest of the way. And, but
that's
but
just something Freed. You talk to the guy about, you know, like,
but it's such a good option though, having Freed or him for game five, if you want.
And I don't know what I do right now.
I don't either. Charlie, because of the pedigree, he's the best winner go home game, big game pitcher there is in history. He's the only guy with four wins in those situations. He's 4-0 in those game, three game sevens in a wild card game. But at the same time, he's also not, he's 37 years old, and Freed right now is unbelievable. So I don't think it's just a gimme. I mean, because you, whichever one you don't use, you'd have for game one in the next series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, they're just, they're so lucky to have that luxury of,
oh, yeah,
of making that tough choice of who you'd want to start game five and still having a fallback for game one. You know, I mean, I feel like it's a toss up. If Freed pitches the way he pitched last time, you know, I go to him every chance I get, but I didn't think Charlie pitched bad. I thought he pitched great. You know, he overwhelmed him for a majority of the game. And,
yeah,
you know, people are always want to criticize whether you leave him in or take him out. But I don't know how you can take him out when he's throwing the ball like that.
When it's got the history he does.
Yeah.
78 pitches. He's given up two hits and one walk to that point.
Yeah. And he made a bad pitch. You know, I mean, like I said, if he has that exact same start and the Braves score four,
yeah,
you're talking about what a great start he had, but the offense didn't score. He gives up a couple and you wind up taking a loss on it, but he still threw the shit out of the ball. You know, I mean, there was nothing about that start that made me feel bad about it.
You know, everybody is guilty of the, I mean, there's so much, you know, retrospectively looking at this thing, you know, revisionist history or looking at, Even some of the national broadcasters, I saw like Pedro looking at some of the pitches he made in that inning. He got three routine fly balls after that leadoff walk in a sixth. None of them were even hard hit. None went to the warning track, took it out of the wall. But they were pointing out like he missed with this fastball up and he missed with this. It's like, really? So that's the reason you take him out? And what if Snit had taken him out after six innings? He's given up two hits and one walk in six fourth innings. Brings him out. And the seventh inning, they give up the game.
Yep.
If anybody doesn't think that the reaction would have been even worse than it was, they're crazy because it's been all year. So you're in a no-win situation there if you're Snit. But, I mean, I'm looking at that going, the guy has thrown 78 pitches. If you look at it's what he's done in the last 2 months, he's routinely thrown 90 to 100 and sometimes 105 pitches. You're going to take him out at 78 pitches with two hits and a walk and six scoreless innings? Because then they said, well, yeah, but he hit the leadoff guy. You take him out. So he threw a fastball, hit him on a 1-2 pitch. That means you got to take him out. I just didn't get it. I don't know why people feel like they have to act like they're smarter than the manager by questioning that. I just didn't think that was, and I'm not defending Snit. I'm just saying I would not have taken a guy out.
Well, it's hindsight's 20/20, but you know, I watched the Yankees Red Sox game. They yanked Eovaldi at 71 pitches. And the Yankees couldn't touch him. Next guy, the only reason they got saved by that decision, I thought it was a terrible decision, just because there's this mindset. You know, I watched that Mets That's documentary.
The playoff games these days.
Yeah, but the thing is when a team can't touch your starter, they will take anybody on earth over the dude that's on the mound and mowed him down for six innings already.
Yeah.
And the Yankees yanked Eovaldi, or the Red Sox yanked Eovaldi. The next hitter, Stanton, hit a ball 400 to left center, torched it. And if he was playing in any other park, it's probably a homer and blows the game. But then, you know, bounces off the wall, Judge gets thrown out at home, and they kind of get off the hook. But when I watch those, just like the Snell thing last year, I just think of the offense's mentality where they can't hit the dude and they feel defeated. And as soon as they say thank you, you know, that mindset change of we got a shot now is something I always want to avoid. And I think, you know, if Snit had yanked Charlie before that inning started and the bullpen gives it up, he's a shitty manager then too. So there's some situations as a manager where you just can't win. Hindsight's 20/20, and you're going to get ripped no matter what.
And I also should say, I would think differently if this was the Braves bullpen when they first got Rich Rodriguez, and also when Chris Martin, if he'd been like he was the last two, if they had five guys, I'm saying, five deep. Do it. Yeah. Do it. but they're three deep, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You're three deep. So you're going to use that on him, and then you know, the next day expect all those guys to come back? I mean, I just if you didn't have to, I think you get one more inning out of Charlie, and that's what he would have done. He wouldn't have gone past seven with him. You know, he wouldn't have gone past seven, and then you turn it over. You got two innings. You got two innings. You're going to use Luke, Matzik, and Will Smith.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it worked out for the Braves the next night. They split this thing, but I just I didn't understand how people and if Charlie would have been at 90 pitches, that's also different. But we saw all year we saw Snit give this guy the chance to go out, and it almost always worked for Charlie, and he appreciated it, you know. And this guy routinely went 90 to 100 pitches or more. So that just I don't question that one.
That's just, you know, managers are just going to get torched anytime a decision doesn't work out, but they never get credit when it does.
And then he got torched again last night for taking Fried out, but it worked out.
Yeah.
But if it had not worked out, can you imagine what they'd be saying today? He screwed up both nights is what they'd be saying today.
Yeah, with two different decisions in the same situation.
Right. I had more problem with yesterday with him taking Fried out than I did with not taking Charlie out, to be honest. Yeah. He did say if it had come up, if Charlie had come up to bat, or if Fried had come up to bat, if Charlie had come up to bat, he would have taken him out, right?
Yeah.
If his spot would have come up. Yesterday, he wanted to get Jock Peterson a right-handed at bat.
Yep.
At a bat against a right-hander. And it almost worked, too. He got that hit. Soler takes it to the wall.
Yeah.
Soler hit that ball almost went out, man.
Yep.
And that two-run homer, then you're not saying anything.
No, that's just how it is managing.
But the Fried one surprised me more than anything, and I thought Snit would never concede or admit that it was the case, but I thought it was a little bit of a response to the previous day. I don't think he goes on social media and all that, but I think he was aware from the questions that he got in the interview room and everything that people were second guessing him or whatever. His rationale for taking Fried out was that sixth inning was very intense, that he thought he left it all out there. I thought Fried looked great in the sixth inning. You know, I thought he looked like he could keep going, but he did give up the double. That was the first extra base hit.
Yep.
He gave up that double, but he got out of it pretty quick. But anyway, he gets through it in 81 pitches or whatever, and he should be fine to come back in game five if they want him. And if not, then they got options. You got options, which you didn't have a year ago when there was no off days in the series, when you were the Braves would not have been in great shape.
Such a drastic difference.
Yeah.
It's such a big difference.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The way that they stepped up yesterday, the Braves pitchers yesterday, because, I mean, Charlie gave you a great game the night before, but yesterday Fried goes phenomenal for six, and then you turn it over. Luke comes in, and struck out two guys, and then they get two on base. Matzik came in, and I thought Matzik was just phenomenal. I mean, anybody worried about Matzik and his past, you know, the mental stuff and all that, he was pitching in a, it was loud in there. And yeah, they've got, you know, that place was rocking. And for him to get through that, that tells me he can handle any of this stuff now, because there were, they had 44,000 people there and they were all waving to things. And you got two guys on base and he made some huge pitches, and he had to strike the one guy out twice because he got screwed on the one two strike pitch.
Was the roof closed?
Not yesterday. It was it was closed the first game and open yesterday. I couldn't tell much difference on the field. I'm sure you could, but it sounded just as loud to me yesterday. It was loud.
Either way, it's loud. I mean, you get 44,000 people yelling. It's loud no matter what. But when that roof's closed,
yeah,
it's like it echoes and it's double in there. But either way, you know, I mean, I kind of think about the same thing with Matzik all the time. Just haven't seen what the yips can do to a pitcher.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's crazy that the yips are that powerful, that he's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
And he's put it behind him, and you're still, that's how powerful the yips are, where it's still like, you know, is this situation going to be the one that, that kind of sends him back in there? But I'll say this about him. When he got those big strikeouts, he didn't fist pump. He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He, that tells me his confidence is sky high, and he just expects to get out of those situations. And he, every time he's in one, man, he's a guy that I wouldn't take out if he creates a mess for himself.
Yeah.
I'd let him keep chucking, because his fastball is almost unhittable. And he threw some breaking balls for strikes yesterday too, some nasty ones. Yep. And he's looking good.
That was a huge jam he got out of that. Luke left him with two on. Mm-hmm. And then he creates his own jam, get two guys, and got out of another back-to-back innings. I mean, he threw like 26 pitches or whatever, and they were intense pitches. He got out of some – I mean, he quieted that crowd because they were on their feet, man. And he shut them down with that strikeout, that last one.
And Snick gets no credit for that. You know, making the right move, leaving him in there to clean up his own mess, having that feel, knowing he has balls and he can get out of jams. You don't get any credit for that.
He had that one strikeout. He thought he had it. And but he said he only thought he had it because
Darnot ran away.
Because Darnot started walking away. And then he was like, oh, it's not. So he kind of span and went back out and did it and threw another one.
Yep. And that sucks, because then, you know, in the back of your head, you feel like you just showed up the umpire and you're not going to get anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, that can get in guys' heads too, where they're like, you know, shit, now I got to be perfect, or this ump's not going to give me anything. You yank a ball. But yeah, he never, you know, especially for a guy that had the yips in the past, which is an anxiety thing, a thinking thing, he never seems to go back there, no matter how big the situation is. He keeps it's firing. Impressive.
Because there are not many guys that have ever come back from it and kept pitching. I mean,
it's usually the end.
Yeah. First two Brewers reached against him in the eighth on a walk and a soft single. And then he goes strikeout, F9, strikeout against their 2-4 hitters, which was also important, because then he leaves Will Smith, starts with number 5, Yelich, who is not the player he was a couple years ago, obviously. But Will Smith, instead of facing the heart of the order, he's facing, you know. Yeah, you know,
well, they always say that, you know, the setup man sometimes throws a bigger inning than the closer. They don't get the glory, but
having those
part of the order.
But having those two guys reach base against him, he had to get through the heart of the order instead of Will coming in facing, you know, their number 3 hitter. He starts with their number 5.
Yeah, and with Matzik's stuff though, I don't care who's up. If he locks in and he makes his pitches, because his fastball, I don't think it gets enough credit, but he can blow anybody away with his fastball and everybody knows he's throwing it. That's why you see such awkward swings and awkward takes when he does throw a breaking ball, because he's like 90% fastball.
Yeah.
They know it's coming and he just blows it by him. He must have something like, you know, crazy extension or really good spin on that thing, because even when he misses with it down the middle, it's a foul ball. And then he hits his spot, it's either a take, they can't pull the trigger, or he just blows it by him. But his fastball is elite.
There aren't many lefties with stuff like him coming out of the pen, man.
No, Jake McGee did it for a long time, living on that fastball. But when you have a fastball that you can throw in any count, hitters still can't hit it.
Yeah.
That's a fun place to be.
Luke's, did you see Luke's tweet that he put up within, within 20 minutes of the end of the game. He goes to the clubhouse and did that tweet.
Well, he's fired up because those are his runs.
Yeah. Luke Jackson tweeted within 20 minutes of the last pitch, Tyler Nutsack NUTZACK. Tyler Nutsack. That's it. That's the tweet. It's got over 5,000 likes.
I was like, man, I wonder how the front office feels about that one.
I think the Braves official. Online. I think their Braves official thing retweeted it.
Well, there you go. Times have changed.
Yeah. Well, that's
you used to not be able to wear your sunglasses on the front of your hat. Right. Now you can tweet about a nutsack.
Well, they still can't wear the sunglasses on the front of their hat.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing. Jock Peterson's out there yesterday. I noticed this. He's out there during BP yesterday. He's got his Air Jordans on, high tops. He's got his pants rolled up all the way above his knees, so it looks like he's got on shorts because he's got, you know, all the leg between the socks and the knee. He's got his pullover on. He's got no cap on. He took his cap off. First, he had his cap on sideways with the sunglasses. He did respect that, though, with the sunglasses on the back of the cap. But he's got it on, like, half jacked to the side. And yeah. he was trying to hit with that on, so he just took it off. So he's up there hitting with this platinum blonde mohawk. And like, the three Braves officials are standing there. Terry McGurk. John Schuerholz, they're all standing there like 20 feet away while he's walking past. It was great.
That stuff probably still catches their eye, but I think the organization as a whole has done a pretty good job of just kind of adjusting to the times and knowing, you know, it's just a different game now, and you got to let guys have fun. But
it's counterproductive to fight it, man, because you want these guys to have fun, and they're so relaxed and this part of the whole vibe, and you don't want to disrupt that by pissing off a couple of them with some petty rule, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you want guys to want to play there.
Yeah, especially when Jock goes out and, you know, hits a pinch hit home run.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's October.
That's kind of how baseball's been for the longest time, though, is you can push a lot of limits if you're raking
or, 10 or jacks, putting up man.
Zeros. Yeah.
10 postseason homers. That's the first one for anybody other than the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I seriously would consider giving him a start myself in place of either Duval or Rosario. Duval's really scuffling. Rosario laid down that bunt, but he isn't doing much either. And Jock's going to give you as good or better defense. And who knows? He might run into one. I mean, he's got a postseason track record. But Snit knows what he's doing, knows how he's using him, and it's obviously working so far. Duval is really struggling, man. He struggled last year in the postseason, and he struggled at the end of this season. I mean, I know he's capable at any time of hitting one out. Look at 113 RBIs, but he's scuffling. Yeah.
That's one of those tough calls, too. You know, I mean – going with the hot hand in the postseason versus what got you there.
Yeah.
Do you go with the guy that, you know, Duvall could go 2 for 3 with 2 homers tonight.
Right. Right.
Or 0 for 3 with strikeouts cost you. And when a guy's cold and another guy's hot or another guy's got that track record, that's one of those tough calls.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't enjoy being in Snit's position.
It'd be easy if they had a lefty starter.
Yeah. That'd solve it for you.
That would solve it for you. As it is, they don't have any lefties at all.
Right.
So Fried, he got a 2-0 lead entering the bottom of the third, and you had to feel good about that at that point. They had the two runs. He had a Jorge Soler pulled that line drive double, dude. That was blistered. He blistered that ball. And by the way, did you see the foul ball that he hit? Yeah. Oh my God, dude. People from the Milwaukee were saying, I don't think I've ever seen a ball hit that high in that upper deck. Their upper deck is really high. It's straight up. And that thing was 3/4 of the way up the upper deck. I mean, it was like, it reminded the one Daryl Strawberry once hit out of Montreal when the roof was still open.
Yeah.
He went out of the roof there in Montreal. Or if the roof was closed, whatever it was, they did not have a foul line painted up there. So now there's a line painted on all the way up on the roof at Montreal to show the foul, because that's where Strawberry hit one, and they didn't know if it was fair or foul. But that's what it reminded me of. That's how high and far it was. So there, God, that man can hit some balls, dude.
Woo. Well, he's Daryl Strawberry plus another 20, 30 pounds of mass.
Right.
That's no doubt. A big boy.
So he hits that line drive double down the left field line. Freddie does what he does, RBI single. And then Ozzie Albies hits a double off the top of the right field wall that hit the yellow. If it goes literally another inch, hits the yellow and bounces that way instead of bouncing. He had to hit the front of the yellow to come back. So he hits another inch, and it's a two-run jack, man. It was an RBI double. So you got a 2-0 lead, and you got to feel good at that point because Fried – in his 10 of his last 12 starts during the season, he gave up one or no earned runs. One or fewer runs, 10 of his last 12 starts.
When you're facing Freed, and you're down two or three runs early, you know, I mean, it's got to be hard to be the other team and have a good mindset like we're getting back in this thing.
Yeah.
When you see the way he's throwing the ball and the team puts up runs early, I always think that's so big. Whoever jumps out to that early lead in the postseason, yeah, and you look and you got an ace or a number two on the mound that's locked in, that's so big for the rest of the game just to kind of just set the tone, yeah, and jump ahead early. It seems that's like those games he did.
Set the tone, and then those guys give him two runs, and it's like, yeah.
Well, especially if you're feeling like that and you're Freed and you get a little run support,
yeah,
you're like, oh, it's a wrap.
Because he wasn't getting that earlier in the season when he was pitching great. He had, yeah, a lot of games there where he pitched great and got no decisions or even a loss.
Mm-hmm.
That game I was talking about, July 28th against the Mets, that's the game where he decided. He gave up four singles and a walk in an inning early in that game, only one run. And he said, in the past, I would have tried after that inning like that, I would have tried to strike everybody out and avoid contact. And he realized he could just keep making pitches and let him put it in play. And from that point on, I said, did you follow that approach since then? He goes, yes, I did. He goes, and he said, absolutely allowed him to get deeper into games because he stopped trying to strike everybody out. He's had a couple of 9 strikeout games like that when he had 2 days ago, yesterday. But for the most part, he strikes out like 5-7 guys.
Yep. But he goes deep.
Yeah. And the two 9 game Maddoxes that he threw under 100 pitches, he only had like 4 strikeouts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a coincidence, you know?
Well, that's something for him to remember, though, and that's just another sign of maturity is he doesn't have to strike guys out. He can get weak contact.
Yeah.
If you watch his fastball, one of them sinks, one of them tails, one of them cuts. He goes inside, the ball cuts in on the righties. He goes away, it sinks away. Sometimes he goes middle and it rides up.
Yeah.
You know, if he pitches with his fastball and pitches to contact, he's still going to get swings and misses, but he can get a ton of weak contact, yeah, pop-ups, ground balls.
And that's all what that stuff. That's what he's looking for.
You know, that's probably stuff that you know, watching Charlie pitch and being around Charlie, he really learned too, because everybody blows up when you strike out, yeah, 10. But
yeah,
going 8, I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's just as big.
Because Ian Anderson's had a couple of those games where he struck out like 9 guys.
And going 5.
And he didn't pitch. Yeah, he threw 90, yeah, pitches in 5 innings.
Yeah.
And Max has realized that he can go 7 to 9 innings in under 100 pitches when he's pitching a weak contact and trying to get those early and count ground balls or, yeah, pop-ups, easy flies. Yeah, he's got the 4-seamer, the sinker, the slider, the curve, the changeup. I mean, and he could throw them all, man.
Yeah.
And he does use them all. So, yeah, he's got that going in that game with a 2-0 early lead. And then Austin Riley adds the bomb. Austin Riley is just silencing critics each day that are wondering when it's going to end for him, when he's going to revert to the old Austin, because he's not. I think this is the guy now, you know?
He's too smart. If, yeah, you watch those clips when he went on MLB Network and talked with DeRosa, yeah, about his swing and the adjustments he's making – understanding what, you know, if he pops a ball up, what that tells him about his swing,
yeah,
being able to hunt windows. When he said, yeah, that, I was like, shit, I haven't heard that before. But hunting windows, you know, looking down and away and anything in that area he's swinging, because you'll see him get locked up,
yeah,
you know, fastball in or fastball away sometimes, a strikeout looking. But when they throw it in the window he's looking at, it seems like he doesn't miss.
Yeah, that's Mike Brumley. That's his working with Mike Brumley. He's like channeling him, man. That guy's locked in with him. He's been a godsend for him. Yeah, that stat was 2 or fewer runs Freed allowed in 10 of his last 12 starts during the season, and only 2 runs, 1 earned in 23 innings in his last 3 starts. So then add 6 more scoreless on top of that. He's given up 1 earned run in 29 innings in his last 4 starts.
And his ERA is like 0-3, man.
He's 4-0 with an ERA like 0-3-1. I put the stat in. It was like, I was like, I had to add it up like 3 or 4 times to make sure I wasn't missing something. I mean, 26 strikeouts I got here, 1 walk in 4 starts.
When you're on a run like that, you just feel invincible. You know, yeah, there's no anxiety. There's no second guessing. And you're just free and easy and just firing and attacking hitters. You know, that confidence just builds and builds. He's in a good place.
And I went back and looked at the strikeouts in that game yesterday. First inning, he struck out Adames on a 94.8 four-seamer. Second inning, he struck out Garcia swinging at a slider. Third inning, struck out Pena swinging on a slider. Fourth inning, Freed gets Yelich looking at a 1-2, 95-mile-an-hour sinker to end the fourth inning. He struck out three of four batters in that inning. Two of them were looking. Adames struck out on a 3-2, 96-mile-an-hour four-seamer. Escobar swinging at a 95-mile-an-hour four-seamer. Okay, so he was through four scoreless innings in 55 pitches with six strikeouts, no walks, two singles. Fifth inning, struck out Pena on three pitches to end a 1-2-3 fifth. It was his seventh strikeout, and that was his first with a curveball.
Yeah.
With all how great his curveball is, that was his first strikeout with a curveball in the game.
But they know he has it. You know, those strikeouts looking on the fastball, that's them respecting that devastating breaking ball. And if he's firing, I mean, I can't imagine trying to cover as many pitches as he has.
Yeah, with that velocity too.
Yeah, he's in the zone right now.
Then in the sixth, he gets old friend Jace Peterson, who had a pretty good year for the Brewers.
Yeah.
And big hits. He popped out to start the inning, then he struck out Colton Wong, and then Adames doubled. That was just the third Brewer to reach base and the first to get past first base.
That makes it tough, man. Who do you throw in game five?
And then he brings up Escobar. They bring up Escobar, and he strikes him out on a swinging on a 2-2, 95.7 fastball to end the inning. I mean, he was just – it was phenomenal. He was so good.
I just can't get over it. If you watched him walking around the mound, the look in his eyes, the intensity, the confidence.
Yeah.
You know, if you're another team and you're – Jose Fernandez used to be like that. When he'd come out and pitch against you and he'd have six strikeouts through three innings or something like that. But you'd see his body language walking around the mound.
Scherzer stalks around the mound.
Scherzer. That's actually who Freed reminded me of yesterday, the way he was just stalking them, walking in that circle after a strikeout. Like he wasn't done yet. Like he was just feeding off of this. He loved it. Guys that embrace the moment like that.
And he's able to do this now without getting overdone, you know, without getting too hyped up where he can't pitch, you know, he's not getting overly excited. He's got that channel like Scherzer does where he can pitch like a caged animal, you know?
Yeah.
He's gotten to that point. He's figured out so much. I just think Charlie has helped him so much. I just have a feeling that Charlie has really done a lot to help him this year. Not that he wasn't getting there on his own, because he was.
Yeah.
He was great last year, but it's hard to believe how much he struggled early this year for almost 4 months. Remember, Freed had he had the blister thing, he had the hamstring thing. His ERA was over five. It was still in the low fours 4 months into the season.
Yeah.
And he's just been phenomenal.
When he gets locked in,
We asked Tyler afterwards. Tyler was asked, would you call him the stopper? Because you know what he did in San Francisco again, and then the game in San Diego, and now he does this after you lose game one. Would you call is Max now the stopper? Would you call him stopper? And Matzik goes, I'd call him the best starter in the second half, talking about it in the majors. I'd call him the best starter, the best starter going down the stretch, a guy that's been absolutely dominating in games that we need to win.
He has been. And you know, I think that's another thing we talked about was just going into the postseason with must-win games. He got a taste of it. He got to pitch in two or three of those before the postseason started. But those games, you know, with intensity, big crowds at Truist, big crowds in San Diego on the road, going into San Francisco, those are all tough places to pitch, and he just kept passing the test.
And San Diego was too, when he threw that nine-inning complete game. That was a lot of people there. That was loud because they were still in it.
It sent them home.
To start that series after they had won the end of the suspended game. It was a Friday night, and there were a lot of people loud there. Yeah, and he pitched tremendous that night. Since the beginning of August, I told you he had the 1.74. He had the best ERA in the majors second half. But since the beginning of August, he's now 8-0 with a 1.35 ERA in 12 starts. The Braves have won 11 of those games. He's allowed one or no earned runs in nine of those 12 games. Here's the last four starts, 4-0, 0.31 ERA. I asked Craig Counsell about it. He said it's just a ton of strikes. There's no free pitches for hitters. He doesn't leave stuff in the middle. The slider's a really good pitch to the right-handed hitters. It kind of bears in on their hands, and he pairs that with a fastball on their hands. Because he's just a really good pitcher executing a lot of pitches. It spells a tough night for the offense.
Everything's moving. You know, he doesn't have a straight fastball. Even like I said, when he throws that four-seamer in, it's got some cut to it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing straight. It's four-plus pitches, you know. What are hitters supposed to do?
He had the four starts last year. Freed was already good, obviously. He had a 24-6 record, 3.57 ERA in 44 games. 41 starts over the 2019 and 2020 seasons, right? This is his first two seasons in the majors, full seasons, really. And then he has a 3.04 ERA last October and four postseason starts. He didn't get a win in any of those. Last night was his first win. He didn't get a win in those, but they won three of those first four games until game six of the NLCS. Snett really thought that postseason experience helped him a lot with what he's dealing with this year. But early this year, remember, he had the hamstring, he had the recurring blister thing. He had a 5.12 ERA after his first eight starts this year. Then that game against the Mets I talked about on July 28th. At that point, he was 7-7. He lost that game. His 4.32 ERA. But he only gave up two runs that night, seven innings. They lost 2-1. That was kind of the way it was going for him early. But since that night, he's been unbelievable. And during this four-start run, I'm going to get those totals right here. I mean, because they are just, like I said, I had to add them up like three times to make sure I had it right. He has got, in those four starts, in the 12 games, he's given up 51 hits, 12 earned runs, four homers in 80 innings with 73 strikeouts and nine walks, right? Opponents barely have a 200 on base percentage in those 12 games against him. OPS is well under 500. Now it was 492 before yesterday. So it's like much lower than that now. And in the four game stretch, he has got, what is that? See, he's allowed one earned run, 13 hits in 29 innings, 24 strikeouts and one walk.
Walks. That's the big one. You know, I mean
that's Maddox like right there, man.
When you got stuff like his, really the only hope the offense has is you put a couple guys on for him and you get that one knock. When he's not walking anybody, strike people out or pitch to contact, get double plays. You know, just it. I guess that's mainly what I see in him is just the aggressiveness, just fearless attacking hitters with plus stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's just a handful right now. The more we talk about it, the more you throw those numbers out. I don't know what I'd do if we get to game five.
Regarding pulling him after 6-8, I told you what Snit said. Tyler Matzik said, you know, we think he could go another inning. We think he's got more in the tank, but, you know, he got pulled when he did. So, okay. Freed answered it perfectly. He was diplomatic, and he answered it just like he does everything perfectly. He said, did he want to go back out since he'd only thrown 81 pitches in six innings? And he said, in the moment, I don't pay attention to the pitch count. I don't try to look at it. I'm ready to pitch until Snit comes over and says it's done or takes the ball out of my hand. Then I'm done. You can sit there and try to figure it out. But for me, it's just a lot easier when Snit says that I'm done, I'm done. And I was good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what else you expect him to say there. You know, right. I mean, it'd be a dick move to come out and say I had two more in me. And
right. I really wanted to go back out. I don't
know why he took me out, you know, but I mean, guys are going to say the right stuff. I guarantee you he wanted to go back out. He was ready to go back out, but
yeah.
That's just the type of stuff is, you know, I think the only time you think about it is when a manager's had a quick hook with you, the only time it affects you.
Right.
You've had that quick hook with him and he gets into the fifth and he gets in trouble. It just adds pressure. But knowing that, you know, they're going to stick with him if they get a chance and just put it aside and just deal. When they take me out, they take me out. I mean, it's a great mindset to have.
Matzik said, we read those stats to him. Matzik said, and I mean, we trust him as a team. We want him to go another inning. Understood that he did his job, but I think this guy has got more in the tank, and I think he could do something real special as we go down the stretch. In other words, he's looking at a start later in this postseason when, hey, maybe you leave him in to go seven or eight innings and see what he does. Yeah. So, but it was something to see, man. And they needed it. He stepped up. He's just stepped up so many times when they've really, really needed it. Mm-hmm. That's really shows some stones there, man.
Yeah, they got a lot of pictures of stones on this team with Nutsack.
Yeah. Luke, Tyler, and Will Smith. Say what you will about him. But that dude comes in, once again, walks the leadoff guy, gives up a little single. You're like, are you kidding me? Yeah. It's a 3-0 game. The tying run is now at the plate with none out in the ninth, and this place is going bonkers. They're going crazy. So he gets a little fly out, routine fly, right? Still two on. So what does he do? You're going, okay, how's he going to get the guy? Double play grounder, and it's over just like that. Yep. You know, the crowd's getting all jacked up, and it's over in one pitch. He can get that double play. He does it a lot.
It's something about closers, man. They just have that ability to maintain a positive mindset. Yeah. Maintain that I'm only a pitch away, you know, and stick to it, because a lot of guys get overwhelmed by that situation. You know, I talk about that a lot with big crowds and playoffs and young guys and getting overwhelmed. It's like what Leo Mazzoni said. You get in that situation, you try to go to your superpower. You try to overthrow. You try to do more. You know, you can only learn through experience that in those situations, it's still tough to hit. If you make a pitch, you're getting out of it. And it's a lot easier said than done. You know, it takes a special guy to be able to remain calm and just keep making pitches and not try to do too much. And that's something most closers have. And give Will Smith all the shit you want. Even in San Diego, man, he stayed calm in what looked like an impossible situation to get out of. He just kept making pitches. Yeah. And there's something, he's got that mentally. You know, if he has to create a mess to lock in, that's something that – you know, you'd like him to work on and pitch like that from the first hitter on. But whatever it is about him, you know, he has that ability to buckle down and not get overwhelmed by the situation and keep making pitches. I know it's not fun for fans, but he finds a way to get it done, and that's all that matters.
I tell you what, after he blew that save in San Francisco to start that long road trip, I wrote that Snit needed to change closers, and that Snit was in danger of all the good that he'd done with his team being undermined by staying with Will Smith. I will gladly admit now I was wrong. And maybe before this is over, maybe Will Smith will blow a save and that's how they'll exit from the postseason. But right now, but Snit was right to stay with him because he has done nothing since then but show some big balls and get out of a lot of big jams. I mean, I don't think he's blown a save since then.
Nope.
And he had that game in San Diego, but that wasn't a save. They never led that when he gave up that after they tied it. But he's
in the postseason. It's all about the guys with balls, you know, all the guys that can handle that situation and, you know, tone it down and stay calm. And plus, he has that ability to do it.
Plus, I suggested, Luke Jackson in that spot because I didn't think Matzik, you know, mentally I wouldn't do it. Well, I mean, both of those guys are so crucial in the roles they're in.
Yeah.
You know, especially with Rich Rodriguez and Chris Martin not even on the postseason roster. And rightfully so. They pitched themselves right off the roster. So we didn't even talk about that. Were you at all surprised? I mean, it was the right decision, but I was a little surprised they left both of them off.
Both of them, yeah.
And Dylan Lee went with the rookie who had just made his debut in the last weekend of the season. But that left-handed breaking ball against this Brewers team, it was a matchup-specific decision.
Yeah, and those things come into play. Martin hasn't been the same for a while. Oh, so I wasn't too surprised by that.
He just hasn't. They gave him every opportunity to show it.
Yeah, and if you're him, you know, you can't be mad. You definitely got the opportunity to prove it and show it. Rich Rod, it was just like, boom, all of a sudden, unhittable fastball to extremely hittable fastball.
I don't understand it at all. And you can't say it was sticky stuff because he pitched great at when they got him. That was after the sticky stuff rule went into effect. And it was, like you said, we were all going, how's he doing this? But he wasn't giving up anything.
Yeah.
And then he gives up five homers in the last 10 appearances.
Yeah.
You know, like 13 hits in 9 1/3 innings, five homers. You can't go with that.
I wouldn't say. I mean, I was surprised they left them both off and went with a guy that's pitched in two big league games. You know, you don't know how he's going to handle coming into a situation like Matzik was in.
Right.
Or if you get into extra innings, you got to throw him an inning. You don't know. But I definitely think that, you know, what those guys showed, Martin struggled for quite a while. Rich Rod, you know, they gave him the opportunities too, and he kept getting hit. They brought him into games that weren't intense. he kept giving up homers and really hard hit balls.
And you know, can't do that in the postseason.
No. And so whatever it is that's changed with him, you don't have time to find out. You know, when a guy has one pitch and that one pitch is getting torched, you can't take a chance that, you know, maybe this adjustment he made in the bullpen before game one is the big one. That you're going to have to bring him in a huge situation. And if that fastball still doesn't have that same life to it, or it's not playing and he gets torched, you look, it's like, well, that was obvious. You know, he hasn't made that adjustment, you know, but
what were you expecting? Yeah.
Were you expecting?
And look at these first two games. There's been a total of 6 runs scored in 2 games. You can't afford to have a reliever coming in who's giving up a home run every time he goes out there, you know?
Yeah.
And the days off, having 2 guys that can go deep in games.
Yeah.
And the days off, they only went with 12 pitchers, where the speculation was, would they go 13 or maybe even 14? But it made sense. You don't need that many with the days off. So I think if it had gone with 13, you probably would have ended up with one of those guys on. But maybe not. You might have gone with Strider, the other rookie that just made his debut. You know?
Yeah, and the only thing is, you know, you could have used this series if you got down 7 or 8 runs to bring one of those guys in and see if their adjustments had played through. But that's the only chance you're going to get. You can't bring
them in. You're not planning on that.
No, and you can't bring them into a big situation pitching like that.
Absolutely.
So I guess it makes sense. It's definitely a hard call because those guys have a track record of being able to handle the load and be pretty good. But
Chris Martin doesn't have a track record in the postseason. Remember, recently. He got hurt his first time out, and they were screwed that year. They had to move Freed to the bullpen as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's, as a player, if I'm one of those guys, I understand. I get it. You know, I haven't been myself. I haven't been good. You can't, you know, you're on that team. If you're Rich Rod or Chris Martin, you're on that team to pitch big innings and big situations. Yeah. You're not there to have, you know, length out of the bullpen. So they kind of just had to go with other guys.
I know their teammates understood it, you know? I
mean, yeah.
But, you know, the only awkward thing about it is, Rich Rod is under contract. I mean, he'll be back next year.
but he's got to take that on the chin.
Exactly. He's got to light a fire under him. You got to figure something out, man. You got to develop a second pitch. You got all offseason. You got to work on that thing.
Yeah.
You got to have something, a better second pitch.
But he's not going to do that until that fastball stops getting hit and he gets left off
the playoff roster. And you weren't going to do that in the middle of the season. You know, Snit talked about that one time. He needs to develop something to get him off that fastball. You can't do that with a month left in the season, obviously.
Yeah.
And you know, if I'm him, I'm going to be ambitious. I'm going to go send me to winter ball and let me pitch for a month down in Mexico or Puerto Rico.
Throw
or whatever.
Sliders.
Yeah.
Throw 1,000 fucking sliders.
Sliders, you know, change ups, whatever. Yeah. But do something. I mean, you got a chance to take ownership, man, of this situation. If you want to avoid the same thing happening next year, you got to mix it up.
Well, I tell guys that all the time too. You know, like with my career, I had 5 straight years where I could just throw a sinker and it was a ground ball every time.
Right.
And then I hit that same button and that thing was in the gap.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a tough adjustment to make, and it's not one you're going to make until you get hit. But when you hit September and you've been relying on this pitch all season and it's just not there anymore, you're throwing it in the same spots where you were getting foul balls when you missed and strikeouts when you hit your spot. You know, I mean, it's a short time frame to try to make a big adjustment. And still, you know, it's one thing if right now they send him to instructional league or whatever's going on where he can get some work and you're punching out A-ball guys on a slider.
Right.
You still don't know if that's going to play against
winter ball.
Yeah.
You face some veteran hitters.
I don't know how you get him back on the roster and feel good about it without, you know, a blowout to test him out in against major league hitters. So
he can't do it this postseason.
He's definitely in a tough spot, but
without injuries, you can't do it in the postseason.
I can't imagine saying this or having this conversation a month and a half ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He was so great.
We were talking about how much depth they added to the bullpen getting him.
Yeah.
For the first month, he was great.
Yep.
Yeah, it's wild, man. But he never had that sinker you had, that unhittable sinker, dude. His was like a 93 mile an hour fastball that we're like, how's he doing this?
but it was working, you know.
It was
why
working.
Why would he adjust when guys kept swinging through it, popping it up, grounding out to second?
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate for him because he doesn't have time to make the adjustment and a place to showcase it and show that it works to get back on the roster. Right.
But the Pirates were willing to give him up for, you know. It wasn't nothing, but it was Bryce Wilson, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, he'll have a whole offseason to figure it out. And if, you know, something bad happens, he might get a chance again. But
yeah,
if you're him, you just got to take it on the chin and understand that.
Yep.
Team's trying to win. Can't be mad.
This can be the thing to light a fire and go, okay, I really do need to do something. I can't just expect things to change doing the same thing here.
But you're not going to, you know, if it ain't broke, you're not going to fix it.
Right. Well, now it's
a little broke now.
Now it's broke. It's like, send me the winter ball.
Adjustment. Yeah. I'd be, you know, if I was in his shoes, I'd be willing to at least go down there and throw 10 games, you know, throw some pens after the season, work on a pitch.
And it's easier for a Latin dude anyway to go down there, you know? I mean, you don't have the whole culture thing and all that, and you can't understand anything. I mean, they're a lot more comfortable on that.
They like doing it. So that'd be a good thing for him to just go throw nothing but sliders. You know, you might get torched a few times, but it gives you a chance to find it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back at it with after this series is over, probably. We'll do this Friday. The Braves hope it's over because you got games 3 and 4 Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday is an off day. If the thing goes 5, we will go back to Milwaukee to play game 5 on Thursday. And the Braves obviously hope to avoid that.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Stay in that haunted motel. The Pfister.
They stay at the Pfister, yeah. Yeah. So we'll do another one of these after the series is over or on the off day or something. We'll see. But these first two games have been great, man.
Good ones.
I know the Braves would have preferred to win both of them and other fans would, but they've been great games.
But they made it home. They made it home even. So that's where
you all you needed to do. You didn't expect to go up there. You would want to win both, but you couldn't have expected to go up there and win both of them. Against there, they got a guy that's going to be finished top three in a Cy Young and Burns. He's very good. Very good. Woodruff's going to get some Cy Young votes too. And Woodruff didn't scare me. I thought that, you know, I thought they could handle him, but Burns was really good. And that was a great pitch game by both sides. So
Burns is a lot to handle.
Yeah. It's now you get into that second tier now with Peralta and Anderson. And then we'll see. Neither team has said what they're going to do in game 4. You know, I think a lot depends on what happens tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Who they have to use and all that kind of thing. Well, but nobody's got a clear-cut game 4 starter.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. 7:55 is real. These are good times. The playoffs, got to love them.